You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
It's Monday, 18 May. We've got Baidu results this afternoon. I'm Simon Brown coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb Global Headquarters in Johannesburg, South Africa. On the show today, Nkunzi Sanlam Private Wealth, government bonds, developed market government bonds. Yields are surging. Even as markets trade at highs and earnings come in strong, those yields are perhaps a worry. Casey Sprake from AG Capital. She's worried about local food inflation and suggesting we might need a rate hike next week. And then we'll chat with Rem Channel. Remuneration, the wider benefits instead of just money in the bank. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more global opportunities through their partnership with JP Morgan Asset Management. Morning headlines, MoneyWeb. Precious metals take a pounding over Iran war and rate jitters. This may not be the buying opportunity many had hoped for, as prices could trend lower. Business day, SA Citrus outlook darkens amid flood and Middle East war. Early estimates indicate around 10 to 12% of the Eastern Cape crop may be affected. Morning markets, US was red on Friday, S&P 1.25% down, Nasdaq off 1.5%. East is all red, Sydney down just over 1%, Tokyo down just over 1%, Hong Kong down 1.6%, and Tencent 1.8% lower. Commodities nearly all red, gold futures 4,535, Brent is the only green, $111.29, platinum 1,973, palladium 1,405, the rand is 1,675, Bitcoin is 76,800, and top 40 opening call, red open 960 points or 0.9%.
MoneyWeb Now, on the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting now with Nkunzi Sanlam Private Wealth. Nick, appreciate the early morning time as always. Let's kick off with those developed market government bond yields. I mean, we've got Japan 30-year at all-time highs. The UK is back at, 1998 levels. These are the longer dated. US 10 years at pandemic levels, which also happens to be 2008 crisis levels. I mean, this is a crisis of long-term debt in developed markets.
Morning, Simon, as always. Thanks for having me on. Now, a crisis of debt, and I also think, you know, the bond markets tend to, I think, maybe look at things not so rosy as the equity markets.
Yeah.
And this is certainly telling you that your cost of capital is rising. It could be the inflationary concerns. It could even be sort of stagflation concerns. But bottom line is cost of capital is rising. Japan's always a good benchmark and a proxy for risk. And as you pointed out, I mean, that Japanese note, 30-year hitting highest ever off the back of this. So I do think there are sort of warning signs beginning to flash about risk assets.
And I mean, we were chatting a year ago in post-deliberation and initial response and then the walk back from Trump. And, you know, the big number was 4.5 on the 10-year. It's gone through that in the U.S. The challenges. I mean, we've gone from those negative yields to these giant yields, and these economies have got lots of debt on the balance sheet. That's the difference between, you know, it's one thing, the UK highs since 98. 98, their government debt was probably half what it is now.
Well, there's a couple of interesting points to point out. I mean, take the US, for example, and Mr. Kevin Warshner coming in, new Fed chair, Mr. Powell stepping down on Friday. I mean, he's come in with the pledge to shrink the balance sheet. I don't know how you can possibly do that. I mean, at over 5% now on that, almost on the 10-year.
Yeah.
I mean, they're now spent, just to put that in perspective, Simon, they're spending more on servicing their debt than they do on defense spending, which is saying something in the middle of the Iran war. I mean, if this had been an emerging market, I mean, there would have been alarm bells. People get nervous. I mean, this is effectively, you know, flagging that up. And then you take the other point, take the UK debt. I mean, obviously there's shenanigans going on with Sir Keir Starmer, et cetera. But I mean, this was what brought down Sir Truss last time round. It's higher. It's higher than that. So, you know, the world woos on capital, and capital is becoming expensive. And I think the biggest fear, if you saw that CPI print a while ago, when it was a week or so ago, I mean, that CPI print out the US Mm-hmm. It's now becoming very concerning that it's not just maybe a transitory inflation shock, that it actually might be seeping through into the broader market, into food, into et cetera, which I can't imagine why it wouldn't, given where the price of energy is. Those are all alarm bells. And again, I think we're heading into a very different space than we were in January.
I take a point on that. A quick last question. If yields are higher, people are therefore selling bonds. Mm. Lots of talk around China selling. I mean, but I don't see where the money's going. I mean, it's not going into gold. I suppose it's going into equities, right? Equity markets are at highs.
You've got that but narrow base, right?
I mean, sure.
We're talking a handful of AI shares that are driving this market higher, and just heads up everyone, Wednesday's NVIDIA.
Yeah.
You know, there's a real push into that AI space because about 90% of the S&P 500 shares that are reported came out, you know, really good earnings, mm-hmm. but they're not on 52-week highs. It's a handful that are pushing this market, and that's a concern. Yeah, I also agree with you, Simon. I don't see where this money is going. Yeah, typically, maybe you expect it to flow like recently into gold, into other sectors. I don't know where it's going. I mean, I look at what Turkey sold off their sort of gold reserves, and they went into defense spending, apparently, into sort of drones and the like. So perhaps uh-huh. Europe is shoring up their defense sector. I don't know. But yeah, again, I just get the sense that if you had a portfolio that stayed exactly the same for the last 3-4 months before the war, I think you need to look at it now because I don't think things are going back to the way they were in January.
I agree 100% on that thing. And this is going to be a long and difficult ground. I'll leave it there. Nekunza, Sanlam Private Wealth, always appreciate the early morning time. Let your money benefit from experience with Stanlib Asset Management. Find out about Stanlib Global Select Fund, which follows an investment discipline that has delivered results for 3 decades.
MoneyWeb now, on the money.
Chatting now with Casey Sprague, market strategist at AG Capital. Casey, appreciate the early morning time. El Nino, which is the bad of the weather formations, this typically brings drought or at least drought-like conditions. Recent note, you say there's probably a greater than 70% chance that we will see El Nino forming by late 2026. Not good news for farmers or farm produce generally.
Ah, good morning, Simon. And yes, unfortunately, it's just adding another layer sort of risk onto the horizon at the moment. I think we spent a lot of time, you know, across the markets, obviously, having the oil prices a driving concern. Mm. But this is another issue growing up that I think people are not quite paying enough attention to.
And I take your point on that. I mean, and it's a little way off, maybe end of 2026, although truthfully, we're midway through May. It's not that far anymore. It's going to, you mentioned, for example, wheat, which is, we've got a recent report, wheat plantings are at 11-year lows. If we then couple that with this, I mean, we are seeing a crunch coming, and this will see prices higher and directly onto the consumer's pocket.
No, 100%. You know, wheat in particular is something that we call sort of the structural canary almost. So South Africa actually only produces around 50% of our own domestic wheat requirements. The rest is actually imported. Mm-hmm. So we actually trade at import parity regardless of what our local harvest outcomes are. And, you know, on that note, our wheat plantings have just actually hit 11-year low. And I think that's just a reflection of rising input costs, worsening structural fragility. So it's those types of, shifts and concerns that sort of permeate through the inflationary basket for us.
And you make a point there. And it's wheat planting. So this is wheat that will be sort of hitting our tables later in the year. In the immediate, in the near term, supply does remain strong. I mean, it's good for now. It is the end of the year and into next that is the concern.
Yes, yeah, no, and I think that's important to highlight. The risk isn't sitting now immediately. It's what we're looking at within the next 6 months to even sort of a year. I mean, right now, if we look at where we are today, overall food CPI is actually quite subdued. It's sitting, I think, latest print at 3.6%. This has been supported by strong harvests and a favorable base here in South Africa. Our maize harvest, for example, has just been revised up to a record. I think it's 16.8 million tons. So all of that together keeps downward pressure on things like CEFEX prices and across the board. But what we say is that the calm is more on sort of borrowed time. And after 2 consecutive La Nina seasons, which is your higher than expected rainfall, mm-hmm. we're starting to see this weather cycle turning. And that's where the concerns come in, as you mentioned, towards the end of the year going into the beginning of 2027.
And of course, what we've also got is an energy crisis. I mean, there's two components to it. One is the fertilizer, a lot of urea coming through or not coming through the Strait of Hormuz at this point. That is a large part of farmer input. And then, of course, diesel, which is another large part. I mean, those collectively are probably over 50% of the farmer's input costs. And both of those are I was going to say record levels, but certainly very high levels, and hurting farmers. They're going to do their best to try and pass it through to us.
No, 100%. I'd say, you know, those input costs are really sort of amplifying the risk at the moment. You mentioned fertilizer. I think it's around 35% of, say, grain farmers' input costs. Diesel, 20-30% of agricultural costs, you know, across the sector. And not to forget that about 80% of our grain is actually transported by road in this country.
Oh, yeah.
So you really see that fuel is deeply embedded throughout the sort of food value chain. And then, you know, I've spoken a lot about sort of crop products and that, but think about your protein products like poultry and beef. They are effectively derived from grain input. So sort of just amplifies the pass-through from grain price shocks into our broad inflationary basket. So you see that farmers are increasingly sort of becoming under strain. And then if you think of more sort of recent localized risks sitting here in the Western Cape, where we've had, you know, floods running through and into the Eastern Cape. So it just keeps layering on that risk level.
So then MPC meeting next week, and you made an article where you make I have to say, unfortunately, a compelling case for an interest rate increase next week for a couple of reasons. One, preemptive, but also, you know, this is our first sort of crisis in our new 3% inflation targeting world. And I mean, almost certainly we're going to get above that 4%, and the Reserve Bank needs to hold on to their credibility.
No, 100%. And I think that's key. Like, listen, I'm the last person that wants to see an interest rate hike myself. And our economy can ill afford it from that sense. But as you just mentioned, we've got this was probably the first real stress test that we actually see now for this 3% target. It's not yet been stress test. So it's almost as if you know, the case is being that a smaller, sort of more preemptive hike now might just save us a bit of pain down the line, almost considered a sort of an insurance move.
Yeah, I take your point, and your logic is sound, but I'm with you. We don't want one, but often what we don't want is often not what we get. We'll leave it there. Casey Sprague, market strategist, AG Capital. Appreciate the early morning time. And that's our poll today, LinkedIn and Twitter. Rate hike next week from the SARB to keep ahead of the curve on rates. Not a nice idea, but perhaps the right move. Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter. Let your money weather the storms with Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in the Stanlib Global Select Fund, a diversified all-weather equity portfolio sub-managed by JP Morgan Asset Management.
MoneyWeb now, on the money.
I'm chatting with Lindiwe Shibeshu. She is MD of REM Channel. Lindy, we appreciate the time today. Your latest salary wage movement survey showing average increases of 5.43% in salaries. That's not a bad number on the surface. It certainly is ahead of inflation and good for people who have employment in South Africa.
Absolutely, we agree to that. And that is a very good indication that employers are still funding salaries. They're putting budgets aside. They are looking at inflation. And at this point, to your point, the increases that we are seeing are a real wage growth, which is positive. However, what we are also noting is that a lot of employees are under financial pressure. So although this is a positive trend, people are still struggling financially.
That's a great point. I mean, 5.3 is a good number. We could say inflation is somewhere around the 3%, but that doesn't necessarily mean it isn't tough out there. I mean, post we've got if nothing else, the fuel price hitting us at the moment, last month and this. It is still tough being a South African wage earner in this economy.
Absolutely tough. And I must say that, Simon, this data comes even before the impact of these increases that we have seen come through as a result of the Middle East impact. We are going to be doing another survey that will take that into consideration. So the financial pressures are not only hitting employees, but we believe that they will start showing in the way that companies are able to afford such increases in future.
Of course, I hadn't thought of that side of the equation as well. What we're also seeing, and you talk around this in the survey, where employers are sort of rethinking total reward, total package, and, you know, soft loans, cash advantages perhaps, even maybe maternity leave and the like, becoming more selective. Is this part of that? I don't know. To me, it feels like maybe a bit of pulling back.
Absolutely. So this is the first time that we are actually seeing an appreciation of the full package, not only the cash salary aspect, mm-hmm. but also the benefits aspect. In fact, our survey, we asked employees what of the benefits that they get as part of their package they value the most. Health and related benefits came up, POPs, leave benefits, disability, group life cover, retirement benefits, a lot more appreciated and so on. But what we're also seeing, exactly as I said just now, Simon, is the cost pressures are also felt by employers. And therefore, we are seeing a lot of employers redesign benefit packages, taking into consideration what they can afford. So as you've just mentioned, we have seen a decline in the number of employers that fully pay 4-month maternity leave. And we believe that this is following the constitutional court ruling that requires now mm-hmm. that parents or birthing parents actually share the 4 months and 10 days of maternity leave. But obviously the legislation doesn't require that that be paid because there's UIF that should then fund that period. Mm-hmm. So what employers who were discretionary using pay for that period are looking at now is the cost that that ruling will come with, given that more employees will now be eligible or that parental leave that has now become a right for employees. And therefore, there are like only 41.7% of organizations that are willing to continue paying at a full rate for that period.
I hadn't even thought of that. Of course, that makes perfect sense. And what we see almost is there must be a bit of, a bit of tension. It's sort of a holistic view. And I get the benefits of it. And I take your point around health and leave being an important part of the overall package. The tension, of course, is rands and cents in the pocket is also hugely important, and it leaves employees in a bit of a tough space, and I imagine employers as well, because they want happy staff, but it's a tough line to walk.
Absolutely tough, and that's why cost pressures from both parties, being the employer as well as employee, are influencing the review of benefit packages. Mm. What we are saying, though, is we should just make sure that employers are taking into consideration what it is that will actually engage staff so that people are still seeing the value proposition as competitive, as fair, and ultimately as helping address their needs, because financial wellness is an important aspect of a productive and engaged employee.
And at the core of it is that the point you just made there, it is around addressing needs. And something that just occurs to me now, an example, we mentioned the fuel prices, perhaps a little bit of work from home with these wild fuel prices take some pressure off the wallet. At the core of this, there's a cost center, there's an expense, but it comes back to those needs.
Absolutely. And what we have seen, unfortunately, is a lot of organizations that have called people back. You would remember that post or during COVID or even just after post-COVID, a lot of organizations adopted hybrid models that were a little bit more flexible than we are seeing of late. What we've seen in this survey is companies that are offering hybrid models have reduced from 86% to 78%. Mm-hmm. And companies that are now mandating 3 days in office have also reduced or rather increased in this case. So they have increased from 41% to 67%, meaning that hybrid is a little bit more structured. That then means people have to spend a lot more money traveling into the office in order to meet these requirements. So it will be interesting, because I think with the petrol price having increased so dramatically, this is going to be something that a lot of employees, when they look at the value proposition, will consider, because those that have more flexibility and therefore don't have to spend so much money on transport will probably consider a value proposition that's more flexible as more meaningful, given the cost of fuel and travel.
Yeah, it's about that value. It's about those needs. And maybe there are some easy wins there, but we'll leave it there. Listen to Ishibeshu. MD, Rem Channel, appreciate the time, Lindiwe. And that's it for today. I was chatting with Pooja Tani on Friday from Perpetua Investment Managers. Jerome Powell's last day as Fed chair. To be clear, he's still on the committee on the FOMC. We asked you what you thought how history will view Powell. It was fairly evenly split between saying a really good Fed chair, a mixed bag. And I think that's probably fair. I mean, as we said, inflation's been above their target now for, 5 years? He was only chair for 8. But anyway, have your vote, have your say. LinkedIn and Twitter. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more certainty to navigate volatile market conditions. We're live every weekday morning, the MoneyWeb website and the app, 6:30 a.m. podcast just after 7. Thanks to my team, Eddie Nobukle, Seren, to you for listening, my guests for their time. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again tomorrow. Results, Astral and Colgro.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.